Welcome back to a truncated edition of the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. It's been 2.5 years since Prince George's County lost its former First Lady. Krista Beverly Baker was 61 years old when she passed away in September of 2021. She had battled Alzheimer's disease for more than a decade. Tonight, we talked to her husband, former Prince George's County Executive Rushearn Baker, about what it means to be a caregiver of a loved one with Alzheimer's disease. He is also a member of the National Alzheimer's Association Board of Directors. Mr. Baker, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, Harold, thank you for having me, and thank you, WHUR, for always bringing these programs to light in the community and around the nation.
Yes, it's really important, and it's been a while since you and I have discussed this issue, and of course, we've discussed this several times before. First and foremost, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I mean, it is... It's something that stays with you. I think if you interviewed any of my three children, they will tell you that the impact it has on our lives. And, you know, from my perspective as someone who had a lot of support throughout the community, I can only imagine what happens with people who don't have that support, which, as you mentioned, one of the reasons that I'm on the national board now is to bring awareness, research, and hopefully some medicine that can help others not go through what we went through.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about that too, and your thoughts about where we are with treating Alzheimer's disease in a bit. But I did want to focus on one of the things that you just mentioned. You were a high-profile elected official with resources during much of your wife's illness, but that's not the case for so many people. What advice would you give to those who find themselves in the new position of caregiver for someone who has Alzheimer's?
I think the best advice I can give, and I say this around the country when I speak to people, is don't be afraid to ask for help and let people help you. That's both in terms of those who will give you respite care from your loved one, and those who will give you therapy. I think one of the mistakes I made as a father and as a caregiver was not recognizing that we couldn't do it on our own. That is, my youngest daughter and I were at home for the most part, but making sure that we brought somebody in early on to help us out, but also doing therapy, bringing those in to help us deal with this disease, which is, you know, can take, as you said, it was about 14 years that we dealt with it as a family. And so while we were, you know, extremely happy to have my late wife with us, it did cause challenges. So I think seeking help and also understanding that this can happen at any age. She was 48 when she was first diagnosed with issues. And so I bring that up because a lot of times, even as two lawyers, we didn't have the necessary things that we should have had, a power of attorney in place in case something happened. We got it done just in time, an updated will, what our finances would look like with going from a two-income family to a one-income family, and what are the prospects if you have young children, as we did, where all three were in college at the same time that we were battling the disease. And what is it going to look like with the healthcare system or dealing with Social Security? And so just think of all of those things that as a county executive, I had legions of people who could help me. But if you're out there on your own, the best thing, and then support groups. So the Alzheimer's Association was a great support group for me and for us to get information on how to navigate this situation. Because as you said, there is no medicine right now that's available that will either slow the disease or cure it. And so the best tool that you have is how do you deal with that person and make the best quality of life for each and every day?
I do want to go back. You mentioned, of course, she was, you know, 48 when she was diagnosed with early onset dementia. And
prior to that, did you have any idea, or were there any signs that, you know, prior to, I believe the incident was when she got lost driving in her childhood neighborhood, or is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. You have a very, very good memory. No, I mean, you take a person who is a highly functioning civil rights attorney who at the time was leading a historically Black college government affairs office. She had been the government affairs director at the United Negro College Fund. I had worked on Capitol Hill and was working for NAFIO, another organization, at a highly functioning way. And it wasn't as if there were anything other than minor slips up. But certainly you don't expect someone 48 years old who extremely bright. I'm glad you brought it up, because that's one of the things you have to look out for. When you're dealing with people who have this disease, who are so smart, they can hide it for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And so she could overcompensate for a little slip up because she was that bright. And that's what you have with a lot of folks. That's why making sure that we have quality healthcare where people are being screened and talked to regularly with their doctors is so important.
And at 48, as you said, you know, sharp woman that she was, I mean, you're at the top of your game as a professional at that point.
Exactly.
And so I'm sure that it was difficult. After the diagnosis, how did it alter your relationship? Because I'm sure, and I know, my father also had dementia before contracting COVID, and even after COVID, it left him with severe Alzheimer's, and it certainly altered our relationship. But that was my dad. This was your wife. How did you deal with that?
You know, it altered all of our lives dramatically. Mm-hmm. She was the person that handled everything, including all of our finances, all of our purchases, whether it was our houses that, you know, the two houses that we had bought, all of that. And, you know, she was the significant breadwinner. Her salary was higher than mine, as we would joke about, you know, on occasionally. But it also meant that she was the person that was, you know, the go-to person for the children. So you have a 14-year-old at home, and, you know, you have a 17-year-old about to go to college and one in college. That's the person who handled all of their stuff. In fact, one of the ways we noticed she was slipping was that she took care of the rent for my son while he was in New York. And mm-hmm. someone who had never been late on any payments actually, you know, fell behind by 2 months. Well, the rental company didn't notify us because she was always paying early. So they just, you know, overlooked it until one day my son told me. And when I confronted her about it, she said, you know, I've got a lot going on at work. And I just took it at face value. But it did alter our lives, and it altered what was going to be our life for the next 14 years. It was clear she was no longer going to work. But it wasn't clear what she could do and how we could handle it. And how our lives as both in terms of me as her husband and my children as her children, were going to deal with that. And she had two elderly parents. So it made it really difficult for me to get them to understand that she couldn't do all the stuff she did for them. She was the only lawyer in that family. And so she handled all of their legal documents. And it was a shock to her father and mother when I said, she can't be the executor of your estate and she can't handle your legal documents anymore. They never accepted it, but it certainly was a hard conversation to have. And so it does, that's what this disease does. It alters these things and it makes you think about even our housing situation. We had multiple steps in our house, and in the beginning it was fine, but clearly had I been forward thinking or had help, I'd have known that eventually it was not going to work.
I'm struck by what you just said. If I had been forward thinking, you are the county executive for arguably one of the most influential municipalities in this country. And yet it suggests that the severity and the requirements to care for someone with this disease can really knock the emotional foundation, you know, from underneath, even, you know, someone such as yourself, who, you know, you were the big brains of Prince George's County and running this county and the very complex world. And I think it just speaks to the heart of how difficult this is. What advice would you give to caregivers about self-care as they try to take care of someone with this disease?
First of all, you just described everything perfectly, and that's exactly it. So emotional that you don't think logically. Mm-hmm. You're operating, and especially for males, you know, you think, okay, I can do this. I can handle it on my own. And you can't. So the advice that I would give is seek help. The other thing for self-help, you know, I was running so much, trying to make sure that we had a normal life every day or a new normal, that I didn't take care of me. And it was clear. The thing that saved me, and I do mean saved me, was the fact that I had good friends like Wayne Curry, who was a former county executive, my executive detail, that could just see that I wasn't exercising, I wasn't reading, I wasn't doing anything but working and then going home. I wasn't even just, you know, thinking about what was going on with the kids. And they came to me and they said, well, you can't, you know, if you don't take care of you, you're not going to be able to take care of her. If you don't get some sleep, you know, you just can't function for long at, you know, 24 hours staying awake. And so it was hard to hear and it was even harder to do, but I think it's what started, which is why I think you've done a show on us, you know, me running with the cadets. That was all part of it. It was to do that self-care and get the exercise, but also to have my mom and my sister and my wife's line sisters come in and actually take her for a day or two, just so I could just, you know, just sit at home.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got about a minute left. A final word from you. What do you want people to know about Alzheimer's?
I want them to know that this is something that can happen to anyone. But also there are ways, if you get the right support and do the right things, that you can make your quality of life and your loved one's quality of life something that you both will cherish for a long time. I loved every minute of this earth with my wife, and it's possible. It's hard, but it's possible.
Rusher and Baker, good to see you again. Thank you. Talking to us. I appreciate it. I know this is a difficult discussion, but so important. And like so many people who have gone through this, you are one of the many right voices to continue raising awareness. So again, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. And don't forget to engage with us on the Daily Drum page of WHUR.com about this and every important topic we discuss. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, April 2nd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.